Welcome to Agents of Smooch. I am Director of Smooch, Annette Weirstra, for day 12, our final day of our 12 Days of Love, actually. I have reconvened our entire ensemble of agents. We have Agents Kirsten Gorick and Katie Burt. Hello, agents.
Hi.
Hello.
I am also joined by Agents Jean McDonald and Sandra Huang. Hello, agents.
Hello, Director.
Hello, Director.
And we have agents Kathy Campbell, Moises Chulian, and Brian Hamilton. Hello, agents.
Hello. We've been doing this for like 12 days now.
I know. It's crazy.
At this point, I can feel it in my fingers and my toes.
And everywhere in between.
Yeah.
If you really love us, Annette, you'd just let it snow or let us go or something else that rhymes with that.
Probably let you go at this point, 12 days in.
Please let us out of the basement.
Oh, no. As a final mission, we are looking once again at the movie as a whole and at the reunion video. In 2017, Richard Curtis wrote a script for Red Nose Day, which is a fundraiser for kids that is done every year in the UK. And it reunited several of the characters and picked up their storylines 14 years later. So let's start thinking about the reunion. And what do you think about this little video, which I will call complete fan service?
I think it's pretty clever and aware of a lot of the cultural conversation around this movie, which, while still like really working within the world of the movie, which I think is hard to do, but again, is kind of what the original movie does with romance and other kinds of, yeah, like rom-com tropes. So it checks out.
I would have liked to know where all the characters ended up, but... You know, it's a Red Nose Day special, and it was only 15 minutes long, and apparently they cut 80 minutes out of the original Love Actually, so 15 minutes is not enough.
That's amazing, hey?
Wow.
Yeah.
One of the characters I would like to have known what happened to would be Karen and Harry, but Alan Rickman had died before this was filmed, so sadly...
All right.
No, Alan Rickman.
I knew he died, but I didn't realize that he died before this was filmed.
Yeah.
Well, they could have still shown Karen, divorcee, sexy divorcee, out and about. But yeah, no, I guess that would, you know, you wouldn't want to. This came out not that long after Alan Rickman died. So. But well, at least we got to see Jamie and Aurelia and their brood.
They were so adorable.
I love that Colin Firth, Jamie. Uncle Jamie.
Uncle Jamie.
I hate Uncle Jamie. Anyways, I love that he didn't actually really learn Portuguese. That feels like super believable. Like, obviously, he knows some.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really nice touch.
Really terrible.
That's just so like, oh, come on. You've had 14 years. Three kids.
Right.
Let's get this.
Yeah, he just doesn't have that ear for languages.
but he thinks he does, which is the funny thing. And you know, the rest of his family totally talks behind his back in Portuguese.
Yeah, and they make things up. then they tell him whatever, which is probably part of the reason why he gets all of his words mixed up.
She's funny. I was like, we finally get to actually hear her talking and being funny. And I was like, I want more of this Aurelia in the movie.
Because we do get it at the very end of the movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just feels like she gets so much more agency in this Red Nose special.
Yeah, they were great.
Well, and I thought both Natalie and Aurelia were quite funny and seemed like settled in their married roles, and I'd like to be married to either of them. They're funny.
And they're both like so just still, right? Stunningly beautiful. So I love that part.
I hated the cue card scene just as much as I hated the first one. In fact, I almost like started to fast forward through and I was like, no, I have to at least watch it once.
I do like how Keira Knightley performs.
You know, I will say when they were doing the cards in the beginning and Peter gets to say, I don't like the beard either. It's like... Okay.
Yes. Yep. It's like he knew all along.
Yeah.
When Chiwetel Ejiofor, reveals that he can hear them. You're right. I did say that it works as like an in-world thing. And there are a lot of moments where they really break that.
They use the same gimmick, which was I don't know. I could have done without that one. I would have wanted to have more Peter.
Also, it was very predictable that he married one of the models. Like, I know.
And it's nothing personal, honestly, nothing personal against Andrew Lincoln. I have to say that of everyone that I saw, he sort of looked like he had the worst mileage. And that could be because he's filming The Walking Dead at the time. So I get it. They couldn't clean him up too much. But it was like, oh, maybe that's appropriate because that character is not great. But I really, really noticed that. I was like, wow, he looks tired. He looks exhausted.
Yeah, it was a little, the whole thing was a little bit of a bonbon for the fans of Love Actually and Red Nose Day. And
it worked well.
I think it worked pretty well. Yeah. I mean, it was more Rowan Atkinson, like, percentage-wise than anything else.
Oh, my gosh. And when he inhaled the scent of the yogurt-covered raisins,
That whole gift-wrapping scene is a health code violation.
The rolling the yogurt-coated raisins.
For that poor little red nose. My gosh.
Especially watching that during, like, COVID time.
Yes.
I was like doubly flinching. Like,
sir, wear your gloves.
Dying.
Put on your mask.
We're in a pandemic.
It was so funny.
I know. That was gross even before the pandemic.
Yep, exactly.
But it was enjoyable to see him doing that and, like, you know, doing it more or less, you know, frame for frame. Except he's in a Walgreens with jelly beans and yogurt raisins or whatever.
I loved seeing Sam and Daniel again. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow, they're really going to say that Sam and Joanna, like, worked out. I did appreciate that, you know, it was kind of like, oh, yeah, we haven't seen each other for a while. And then we, like, saw each other again. And not like we've been together since we were 12.
I would have been much more offended.
Yes.
Yeah.
Also, Sam looks exactly the same, but he's taller with a terrible little mustache. And I'm like, shave that mustache off, dude.
It is weird, like, watching that back to back with having rewatched the movie and seeing them just all instantly age.
Yeah. We didn't talk about Sarah's ending.
Patrick Dempsey.
Oh, my God. You go, girl. You get it. You get Patrick Dempsey.
She seems to be doing pretty good.
And I like that he says, I love calling you because you always pick up the phone. And it's like, you're so good at that. I'm like, oh, see.
They have jokes and she's, like, light and having fun and flirting with him and it's super cute.
Do we assume she's back in the United States?
I feel yes.
Yeah. It is interesting. Like, we didn't talk about this during any of our episodes, but how many, like, Americans there aren't obviously there's more British people in this movie than Americans, but yeah, I don't know. I'm always interested by that, like, I think it's because it was an American-British co-production, but, you know, the Walgreens of it all.
Yeah, but it interestingly, that the two, the UK version and the US version, they're in different pharmacies. So they're in Walgreens in the American one, and the little kid speaks with an American accent in one and a British accent in the other.
I didn't realize it was America the first time I watched it, which maybe means I watched the British version. I don't, or maybe I just didn't notice.
Yeah.
But immediately watching it this time, my sister was like, they have Walgreens in England?
No, they do not. They do not. So they filmed some extra scenes for it. For the American version, because they also did a Red Nose Day in the U.S. now.
Much less of a cultural thing, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, hopefully we have our own.
Hugh Grant, dancing to Hotline Bling is something I didn't know I needed in my life. I'm so glad it exists.
Hugh Grant's aging well. Good for him.
Mm-hmm.
Good for you, Mr. Grant.
Yes. Do you feel, like, at the end, he... because it's 2017 when it comes out, and he says he's optimistic. And it's not just love, you know, good is going to win. It's not just romantic love all around and that sort of speech. And sitting here in 2020, how do you feel about that?
Oh, I actually teared up.
Yeah, I did too. Oh, especially like the final like montage of heart-wrenching children being helped by a charity just, I was like, I already got done crying over Harry and Karen, you know, back then, and now I'm crying again.
It's the hope that kills you.
It's exhausting to be hopeful and then constantly have humanity reveal its lack of care. And I am a very optimistic person, and even I am feeling very heavy and weighted down lately, and that's okay. It's okay to grieve the lack of humanity in the world. It's okay to be sad that people don't love each other and wear their freaking masks. But I'm still trying. I'm still trying to find the optimism. I hope that when we do 12 Days of Christmas 12 years later, we will listen to this episode and this series of episodes and realize it was a turning point, and here comes the future. It's going to get better. That's my hope.
This movie hit at just the right time when I am feeling very nostalgic for travel. And mm-hmm. so romanticizing the idea of an airport arrival gate hit me square in the feels right at the time I needed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's so far away right now, right?
Being in a long-distance relationship across an international border, seeing the arrivals gate at an international airport, you know, heading into a holiday season where, for both of our sakes, even though she's got universal health care, yay, Canada, yeah, we are having to figure out and make do with what we know is better for both of us so that we can have that happy ending, goofy romantic comedy thing. The whole state of the world makes me be a bit less cynical, a bit more appreciative of the goofy, silly, ridiculous, outlandish, unrealistic stuff out there. Because that's love, man. That's love. You know, Love Actually is so embarrassing, but so is love. Super, super embarrassing.
I do like Aurelia's line, if you're lucky, your life will be 60% happy. There are too many complications to be 100%, which I find reassuring with the year that 2020 has been. And it's like, okay, so, you know, that's just normal. Everyone's going to have shitty times, and we're going to have good times, and we're not always going to be happy, but it's going to be, I don't know, it's comforting to know we're all miserable together. I don't know.
I also had that thought watching the opening sequence of the movie in general, the whole like hugging at the airport and stuff. And I was like, oh God, this doesn't hold up in 2020.
Yeah. Like, you get that during Hugh Grant's speech scene as well, where he's kind of, you know, in 2017 addressing that things have gotten a lot worse in a lot of ways. Like,
and you're like, generally. Oh, 2017, yeah. You didn't know nothing.
You're it's adorable. Crazy.
What went through my mind was like, what was so bad about 2017? Wait.
Yeah, exactly, right?
But yes, actually, things were bad. Yeah, they were. You know, I had to, I mean, things got bad. Things were getting bad. We didn't know that.
I think that was when people were still thinking, is this real? Is this really real? How bad things are getting, right?
Yeah, because it was only in March 2017.
Right. And also Brexit, you know, like had also been voted in this just a year before. And yeah, so it did make me wonder, what are they talking about?
I'm afraid we're going to be like in 2023, like looking back on this and just be like, oh, wow, 2020, so innocent. I can't believe I just said that. I'm sorry, I'm tempting fate.
And I will edit that out.
Please do. It.
He ultimately says he's optimistic, but
love is all around. I think love's around. There's just some other stuff too.
Yeah. There's other things in the air now too.
Yeah. Viruses.
Now, there was a Red Nose Day special with the Four Weddings and a Funeral, I think came after this, which I also enjoyed. And I'm also thinking now, well, what's the next Red Nose Day special going to be?
I haven't seen that one. I will have to check it out.
Oh, it's good. I'm sure if the three of us watched it, we would find out how problematic it is. But it's less problematic than the original, I believe, at least in terms of having a more diverse representation of love.
2020, Love Actually. Is it deserving of being a modern classic? How is it holding up for you?
It is a great way to show how much the world has changed. Mm-hmm. And how much growth can still happen. Maybe giving old white guys complete power over movies doesn't always make the best choices. I don't know. Just throwing that out there. I know this is kind of a new idea that people haven't really thought of before. But I do like the way that this movie has kind of started changing the idea that, you know, you don't have to have a movie with happy endings all the time, that real love can be shown kind of as well as the fan service, as well as, you know, the dreamlike state of old white guys wishing that their hot young helpers would support. But I like where this can go in the future.
This is an important movie to me because of how well it bounces back and forth between all these different characters. It was the first time I had seen something like this, and I'm reading on Wikipedia that the writer-director was inspired by Pulp Fiction in a bunch of ways, which I think is really funny.
That's really interesting.
So that explains all the misogyny.
Okay. Oh, yeah. The only thing about this movie that explains misogyny. No, but yeah. Looking forward and seeing how movies in the future, specifically The Avengers, like really weaves back and forth between all of the different ways that it can be such an interesting storytelling mechanic for all these characters. I don't know. I think this was the start of something really great and also the start of something really awful in the emulated movies, Valentine's Day and New Year's Eve. Not good.
Yeah.
This movie had to walk so that Valentine's Day and New Year's Eve could run.
And trip on their faces.
I don't think I've seen either of those ones, and
they're
it
so
sounds
bad.
Like it's probably
they're
good.
Real bad.
Maybe it would be, oh, we should do an incomprehensible,
yeah,
and
we should
take a drink whenever it switches scenes.
Yeah, we'd be dead in about 5 minutes.
It holds up for me in that it's a nice movie to look at. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of jokes, some of which are not problematic. I enjoy the actors in it and the music. The music is awesome. So overall, I would say until somebody tells me what my next Christmas movie is.
So thus the conclusion is Jean is open to right. suggestions for new
yes,
movies.
I am. I'm sure I will get a lot of new ideas now being in the agency. So I may start watching something yeah. else every year.
I am, well, you can probably guess. For me, it used to be in every holidays film, but it isn't anymore, unfortunately. Even though there are definitely still storylines that I really quite enjoy. I don't think I could watch it every year. So I've watched it, this is the first time in maybe 10 years. I might wait again. Yeah, for me. And I totally get where you're coming from, Jean. I do.
You know, it's definitely... I totally get where you are coming from. And the more we have these conversations, you know, the less likely it's going to like magically pop up on my device and say, oh, look, there's Love Actually. I might just start watching a yeah. little bit of it. I might be thinking, well, I'm tired of the card shtick and I'm tired of the very narrow view of people in love, and I also don't want to cry again because of the sad parts that happen. So
Love Actually has moments. It has, you know, gif length clips. It has moments that will always be meaningful to me, and I find that with a lot of movies about romance that maybe haven't aged well, maybe didn't age well from going out of the film can into the projector when first exhibited. There is something about love that is why this movie got made, and the even if it is just fleeting glimpses of stuff that is good and meaningful and pure, the movie still has that in different amounts.
It still feels very white to me.
Mm-hmm. And very rich.
Yes.
And very
yeah,
straight.
Yep. Very slightly sexual harassment-y.
Yeah.
You know, with the pending television remake from Moises Studios, I think we're going to fix a lot. I think we're going to introduce actual queer characters.
What?
Yes.
People of color with more than three lines.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't even know you could do that, really.
It's going to be completely revolutionary. Look at how well they were to be able to have main characters be people of color. Granted, they did only have a couple lines and a couple scenes. But come on, you had one Mary, Keira Knightley.
Yeah, Chiwetel Ejiofor had like three lines. And, yeah. And you know, now he stars in whole ass movies.
He should have had many, many more lines.
So many more lines. Really should have.
Yes, he should have. I'm much more interested in Colin's black friend, who is literally Tony. The black friend in terms of his role in the movie. He is the black friend, as you know, as from like She's All That and that sort of thing.
He's also like the lighting director in the porn shoot, or
yes,
something. I don't know what his role is.
Tony is the most fascinating person in the movie that gets the absolute least actual to do. And I'm like, wait, hold on. I want to know what this guy's life is.
Yes. Where
he is the lighting director of porn shoots and he has literally the worst best friend in the world. I want the Tony movie. Yes. is what I want.
I still like it. I still watch it. But
yeah,
I think,
same.
Like, I think there's that saying I really like, when we know better, we do better. Mm-hmm. And so I think when we watch problematic favorites, which is a phrase that I now use thanks to Deb,
mm-hmm.
when we watch those kinds of shows, we just sort of have to be aware of what maybe isn't okay with it and how do you frame that conversation and what do you do about it, and not just consuming stuff blindly, right?
Yeah, like I definitely see the criticisms that people have of this movie and, you know, agree with them. And I still love this movie. I don't know how I would feel about it if I watched it for the first time in 2020, but, or if, you know, like I am a white person, like there's so many things, you know, you bring yourself to movies, and I totally respect the people who are like, this movie is not for me, or it doesn't have that same kind of nostalgic or comforting aspect to it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel, I guess, kind of lucky that it does for me, because I like having those things that I can find comfort in, especially as it feels like so much changes from year to year. Yeah, this movie is definitely one of those things for me.
Revisiting it means that you're going to learn a lot of stuff that has not aged well about the movie, for sure. Stuff that you just like forget about in all the years of watching it. And I don't think I'll retire Love Actually for my annual rotation, but I will probably be less excited or be a little bit more like steeled about it, being like, oh yeah, they make all the jokes about how she's fat, blah. Like, I'm not going to, you know, look forward to that, because now I will remember that it's in there. I think that's the thing about problematic faves, is that you wind up forgetting a lot of the bad stuff that's mm-hmm. in it between viewing.
Like the ghost blowjob in Ghostbusters.
Or lots of late 2000s movie, or like late 2000s, early 2010s movies that drop a certain ableist R word.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
All the time.
All the time.
Mm-hmm.
What I've come around to is realizing that Love Actually was the curtain call for straight white people running all of romantic cinema.
Yep.
And, you know, it had to happen so that we could close that chapter of history that was not as intersectional, not as inclusive as romance is and should be. And we've seen many of the people in this movie show up in other stuff down the line, where they get a lot more to do than be, you know, the PM's aide who makes a fat joke and that sort of thing. Yeah, there's a lot that happened as a result of this movie, in response to this movie, that wasn't an abomination like Valentine's Day or New Year's Eve.
Yes.
One last fun fact from the commentary. Keira Knightley was cast in Pirates of the Caribbean while filming this movie. And the director said, you're doing a pirate movie based on a ride at Disneyland? Good luck.
She showed him.
Yes, exactly. She clearly like came out of this on top, and he didn't know what he was talking about.
She could have retired off of the earnings she made off of that franchise, and he is still having to explain himself 17 years later.
Watch this movie with the commentary. You will be delighted. It's probably top five commentaries.
Oh, like the visualization of farts? Which will make sense once you listen to the commentary. Not our commentary, on the commentary on the movie.
Yeah, it's very good, even though somehow they could not find a female to be on the commentary. Like, that was just so hard. I know. It definitely has issues, but it's still delightful.
Well, Kathy, I know you're talking, but like I was saying, if you involve a female in the commentary, well,
I mean... I know a little peek behind the curtain here at Brian Hamilton House. In rewatching the movie for this series of podcasts 12 days ago, I skipped large swaths of the movie that were not part of the assigned days for us. And one of the things I was happiest about in realizing, okay, I'm going to scroll through this, is realizing that I knew every beat of this movie. Being like, oh yeah, okay, so I'm skipping over when he gets the drum set. Okay, I'm skipping over when he brings Banoffee Pie and they watch the creepy footage. Okay, yep, there are the cue cards. We can read them all, blah, blah, blah. That felt really good, knowing that, like, this is a modern Christmas classic, or as something that I believed was a modern Christmas classic, meant that I had seen this annually for so long that, you know, I knew it pretty well. And that bodes well for the commentary track, which means, you know, I can put this on in the background, listen in, and kind of, you know, just learn some Kathy fun facts while kind of half watching this movie that I'd spent a lot of time loving.
Well, I'm always practical in the sense that if you tell me what I can replace it with, I'm open-minded. The time when it, you know, when I first saw it and have watched it, various streaming things, like, it's one of those things, like, if I start to watch it, I say, oh, I'm only going to watch this part of it. I end up watching the whole thing.
Maybe you need to watch Last Holiday.
I was just going to suggest it.
Yeah, Sandra and Kathy and I watched earlier in the season, and it's just like such a happy, joyful movie that will make you feel good.
It's a lovely film.
Okay, it's on my list.
Yeah, try that one. Starring Queen Latifah, and it is
absolutely
is fun.
I would have suggested that one. I mean, as well, I'm also the type of person who likes to watch Die Hard, so at Christmas. So I don't know. I
mean,
it, you know, I contain multitudes. That's all I have to say.
I'm with you. That's a good, like, for everyone who will try to say, you know, we're agents of smooch, so we're all about romance, but I'm totally okay with Die Hard being a Christmas movie. Like, why do we have to be so rigid?
Well, it is a romance. Come on.
It is a romance. Maybe we should do that next Christmas.
It's Alan Rickman and Bruce Willis. They're the best couple ever.
12 Days of Die Hard next Christmas.
Wow. That would be dedication.
Maybe. You'll have to wait a year to find out. I just think it is time to, like, let's get this movie remade.
Yeah.
Because I think the framework and the structure of it is still really interesting, and that's probably why we keep coming back to it. And you've got some good characters and the mix of them, and it would be nice to have, like, let's have, we'll say 2022, 23. We'll give, you know, a little time for this pandemic to run its course, and like someone get out there, start making out our new version of this so we can have this in a few Christmases. That'd be good.
Yeah, I would be so on board for a redo. They did Four Weddings and a Funeral, and it was amazing as a series, so bring it on. People who make things, listen to me, do this.
In that show, there were, because that's a Richard Curtis, he was part of the executive producers, and it pulled from his movie, original movie, but they also pulled from Notting Hill, and they also pulled little bits from Love Actually. There's little shout-outs there. Yeah, I think that show was much more diverse, and intentionally so.
I mean, I think one of the reasons why I love this movie so much is because I am a bit of an Anglophile, or especially was, like, growing up. And, you know, the first time I saw this movie, I'd never been to the UK or to London specifically. And I have been there since a fair amount of time. So, like, that also changes my relationship to it. But I also think, yeah, if you think of it as, like, a story about London, obviously London was not this white and rich and, you know, straight. Like, there's always been lots of diversity in London. But I do think that obviously we've gotten better, and, like, the British TV and film industry has gotten better at showing that on screen. So it would be cool to, like, yeah, just see whether it was called, you know, whether it was Love Actually or something similar, that was just really committed to, like, a London Christmas story that still it believes in, like, a lot of the romance and optimism and complexities of love, but with, all the things we've gotten better at doing in terms of inclusive storytelling and all, you know, maybe the ways that, like, the world has changed and London has changed.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, they're always remaking crap I don't care about. Do something I do care about.
Yeah.
I'm wondering what the title would be. I feel like you'd have to, like, would you call it Love Actually?
I don't know.
Call it Actually Love. Can't steal that, it's mine.
I always think it'd be funny to just, like, call this movie Love Actually Is All Around, like, just really commit to the bit that that's the whole title,
and so there's no confusion
that.
Well, because it's a weird title.
That's
such a weird title.
Love Actually.
I want to thank all my agents who have joined me on this final mission of 2020 and throughout the year. We hope that we have brought a little happiness to you in the middle of this pandemic and the hellfire that 2020 has been. I'm so grateful that you have come along on our missions, and all I want for Christmas is you. And you. And you. And whether you celebrate Christmas, Festivus, or another holiday, or nothing at all in this darkest December, we wish you love, joy, and light. We will see you again in 2021 with even more romantic missions. Until then, stay safe, agents. Agents of Smooch is part of the Incomparable Network. If you are enjoying our show, please leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you want to join the Smooch Agency, you can become a member of the Incomparable at theincomparable.com/members. Members can choose to support us and any other shows on the network, and you get extra perks like hanging out in the members-only Slack channel and bonus content such as our growing list of incomprehensible Agents of Smooch tipsy commentaries. Thank you for listening. Your next mission will be coming to you soon. We'll be right back.